Forest bathing is a contemplative practice that it's a little bit like mindfulness in nature, but it's more than that and deeper than that. It's a practice that is both ancient and modern. It's influenced by research from all over the world in numerous different areas like psychology, social sciences, medical research, as well as being influenced by a few traditional practices as well. It's something that you can do on your own or with a guide. And it's extremely good for your mental health, your physical health. There's no downsides, really. The research is extraordinary. It probably really ramped up about 30 years ago, and it comes from every walk of life. There is research from looking at urban green space and how that influences people. There's research about specific areas of nature that influence us, such as the soundscape or what it is about the visual elements that affect us, what happens in our brains. So there's a fair amount of neuroscience now looking at brain scans. So they often look at groups who have done something in a natural environment compared to groups who do a similar activity in a city environment, for example. The differences are quite stark. There's research in the medical area. We know that spending time in a forested environment, for example, can boost your immune system. It can help diabetics to keep their blood sugar lowered. It can reduce inflammation, reduce headaches, help with preventing anxiety. It can lower stress. So the research really is everything from deliberate experiences in nature also to incidental nature. So, for example, there was a beautiful piece of research done in America where they found that if you add 10 more street trees to what they define as a city block, the residents in that area think they are healthier to the equivalent of being about 7 years younger or having an income $10,000 greater per year. So nature can even influence how we think about our health. In the UK, they did a similar study about people who lived close to the coast, and they found that people who lived within 1 kilometre of the coast thought they were healthier than people who lived further away from the coast. So it can influence our perception of our health, our actual physical health, our mental health. Basically, nature is an optimum space for human beings.
I was quite interested in the Japanese research name. Do you know how to pronounce it?
Shinrin-yoku. It's not quite precise, but it's close enough.
It's close enough. Where they, you know, took people for walks out in nature and measured things like their cortisol levels before and after, and discovered and that the same walk in a highly urbanized environment didn't do the same drop of that cortisol.
The Japanese are really pioneering a lot of the physiological research. So they're the ones who found out that there are certain tree chemicals that boost specific parts of the immune system. In particular, there's a set of T cells that work on cancers and viruses, and they're boosted by time in nature. But they also, yes, found that the cortisol research is pretty solid. They're not the only ones to do that. Quite a lot of researchers use cortisol because it's an easy to measure indicator of stress. Neuroscience has backed up the same finding and found that when people walk in cities as opposed to natural spaces, they put them in an MRI afterwards. People who had walked in nature, parts of their brain lit up to do with positive experiences and relaxation. It was backed up by personal reports of subjective well-being and cortisol. The people who walked in the city, parts of their brain lit up that are related to stress and negative emotions, particularly things like fear, anger, sadness, violence, and they had no cortisol reduction at all. So it's fairly definitive on that physiological front.
Because it's a great term, forest bathing, isn't it?
No nudity required, just immersion.
Yeah, the sense of immersion and the sense that, you know, this forest is this big, welcoming place. We need to go back there sometimes.
Or a beach. Or a piece of bushland. It doesn't need to specifically be a forest. A forest is nice. It conjures up lovely images in a lot of people's minds, but it doesn't need to be specifically a forest. At the same time, there's a little bit of research, although I believe it's quite small, that says that deserts aren't ideal either. Some people love the desert, and that's great, but doesn't work as well for most people. So there are certain environments which can definitely have that immersive effect, and the ocean is one of them. Whether you literally get in it or whether you just sit in the dunes and stare at it and breathe in the salt air and listen to the wind, the idea is that sensory immersion. So in the forest bathing experience, we encourage people to use all of their senses to really delve deeply into that experience of the forest without having to know what anything is. So we're really moving away from the cognitive domain. We don't do any identifying anything. We don't do any bird watching. We don't do any counting. It is a way of being in nature that immerses the senses and brings us into that present moment. Yeah, it's...
You're involved in bringing this concept of forest bathing to South Australia. How is this working?
I was part of a cohort that did a week-long training last year in New Zealand, and there were three Australians. I was one of them. So I'm the first person in South Australia to be certified in the practice. It's being done by an organisation in the USA, but they're doing it all around the world. And in the last 4 years, they've now trained about 250 guides in about 15 different countries. People who've come from all walks of life. I've had people in their 20s to people in their 70s. I had a lady who came once with two walking sticks and she did the whole thing. She was just brilliant. I have people from every kind of lifestyle. It suits everybody because everybody can benefit from it. And it's not necessarily a conscious benefit either. As well as getting physical exercise by bushwalking, for example, you can still get health benefits from sitting under a tree for half an hour. They're just different types of benefits. And so this is another way of being in nature that we don't do a lot in the Western world. We don't often just take half an hour to lie under a tree and stare at the sky. It's a really different experience.
So where do you take people?
Well, at the moment, I've been doing it mainly up at a location in Bellaire National Park. There's a beautiful corner that's a relatively quiet part of the park. But I have been exploring some other locations up at Parawira Conservation Park. I've done a couple up there. I'd like to use it more. I'd like to do a beach one, but I haven't found a suitable location just yet. It is quite time-consuming scouting out locations because part of our ethic as a guide is to know your location fairly well. So you know where it's safe to go, you know what the trail hazards are, you know maybe if there's edible plants in that location, you might be familiar with some of the plants there, you might know the best way to get out of that area, you know whether you've got mobile reception in the area. It takes quite a while to get an area familiarised. I'm actually doing one at a private property, which is quite exciting, and I'm also working with another private landowner. I'm happy to do it wherever there is interest. It's important to recognise that nature connection doesn't have to happen in a really remote location. It can happen in your garden. It can happen with your pot plants, or if you have balcony herbs in an apartment, or just pots in your kitchen windowsill. It doesn't matter where it is. What matters is that you noticed and that you took time to be with those things on an everyday scale.
I think what you were saying earlier about the damping down of the cognitive aspects of the brain, we do a lot of cognitive stuff and we don't do a lot of meditative, reflective. A lot of us actually have trouble thinking this is just a waste of time or even guilt. I should be doing something more useful.
Yeah, isn't it fascinating in the Western world how we've built up this world of I have to be doing something all the time. And
yeah, we have a lot of trouble justifying our existence, don't we?
Yeah, yeah. You know, in your workplace, if you are found to be staring out of the window, I mean, God forbid, you know, you might actually not be doing any work, shock horror. But actually thinking space and being space is so important. And sometimes with some of the people who come on the forest bathing experience, it feels like maybe what they've bought themselves is just a little bit of time. And they've put value around that time and they've quarantined it to say, yep, this is worth my investment of financial resources and my time resources, and I'll spend that time doing something for myself. It is important. I mean, how many people struggle to even do 20 minutes of meditation a day? I know I don't. I mean, I'd love to, but it doesn't happen. I've also had the experience where quite a few people now have got to the end of the forest bathing experience and they said, oh, you know, I feel like I've been meditating, but it was so much easier than meditating. And I realised that for myself, that was also the case. So I'd rather go and spend half an hour or an hour sitting in a forest than meditating every day, because for me, it works better. But yes, you're right. In the Western world, we don't quarantine the time for ourselves to, take care of ourselves.
It's interesting what you say about meditation, because it's such a concept that is foreign to us in the Western world. We haven't learned how to do it from small. It becomes another task, something else that we've either, you know, that we've got to do, and then we sort of grade ourselves at the end of it. You know, how well did I meditate on a scale of 1 to 6? But from what I hear you saying, people's experiences with this is it's like it happens automatically. If we just sort of go out and find ourselves a piece of something that we connect to, whether it be the bigness of the sky or a tree or the ocean or whatever, it does it for us, and we don't have to put in quite so much energy to try and attain that.
For some people, definitely.
Right.
Some people say, oh, yes, I've been lying on my forest floor for years and I know that's good for me. So some people know and they do it for themselves, and that's great. The reason we have trained guides in the forest bathing in particularly is some people do just need a little bit of help, a bit of help to have that sensory immersion, to take it a little bit deeper, or to help people slow down. We really slow people down in the experience, and using a guide can help with that, because in the Western world, we are rushing around from here to there. We are frantic people. And the forest bathing experience, we dramatically slow people down. And that allows our alert system, the sympathetic nervous system, but the alert system, sympathetic nervous system, the forest bathing allows it to relax, and then allows the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the relaxing system, to come to the fore. And that then releases in the brain all the feel-good hormones like oxytocin and dopamine and so on, which is somewhere right in the middle. All our physiological systems tell us is an ideal, optimal environment for our functioning physiologically, mentally, emotionally, socially, in every way.
Which environment speaks to you the most? You know, you've obviously been to quite a few of them. Which one did you find easiest to connect with?
It's a tricky question. My background is actually in marine biology and marine conservation. So many, many years ago, I connected very deeply with the ocean. I became a scuba diver and I went into that marine stuff, and I was absolutely set on fire about saving the oceans, and I still am. But I can be inspired pretty much by any environment. And also different environments can do slightly different things. So there's a whole body of research around the emotion of awe. And so environments that have spectacular vistas and views and inspire that wow moment can do different things for your body, as opposed to the environments that don't necessarily have the awe factor but might have other good factors, like seeing lots of greenery or smelling the salt in the ocean air. So lots of different environments can have different benefits in different ways. And so for me, I'll just bring it all on.
The one that I remember on that one that you're talking about was awe, was a night that I spent, and this is nearly two decades ago now, camping on Lake Frome, where it was a full moon and we were camped on the edge of the lake, and we watched the sun go down over the Gammon Ranges, and then we watched the full moon come up over this glittering salt lake, and it was stunning. It was just absolutely stunning. It was like nothing I had ever seen, and it has stayed locked in my mind ever since.
Oh, you're high on the happiness scale there. Yeah, it's amazing. The emotion of awe can do really incredible things for your physiology and add to your happiness. In fact, talking of happiness, there was a beautiful piece of research came out of Canada a few years ago that showed that nature can contribute a specific element to people's happiness, which is an important part of our well-being. There's another one about time as well. So in your experience that you described, I could imagine a sense of timelessness with that. Yeah, this was really new research, actually. They showed that being in nature can reduce impulsiveness. And in teenagers in particular these days, that is incredibly important. In fact, for probably quite a few people who are impulsive, it can be important. It changes the way we perceive time as well as all those other things.
So what I'm hearing you saying is that that sense of going out into nature, but also bringing it back, planting more trees on our streets, sitting on our balcony or in our shrinking yards, but actually designing it specifically so that you can have that timeless place among, you know, your batch of herbs or, you know, your flowers that you're attached to or whatever it is that you've planted.
Absolutely. I recently came across something really neat, which was designed by a researcher in America called the Nature Pyramid. So people might be familiar with the food pyramid, and this is a very similar idea. So the idea is that there are four layers in the pyramid, and in the bottom layer are the things you can do every single day, whether it's watering your pot plants or picking a herb or just noticing the birds in the sky, whatever, really simple everyday things. And it's the noticing at that level that's often useful. Then there's things you could do at a weekly scale, things that you can do monthly, like going to maybe a national park that's a little bit further away. And then right at the very top of the pyramid is the once a year, that's the wilderness experience. You can have positive experiences at all of those levels, but integrating it into your everyday is ideal. And yet the wilderness experience can give you things that the everyday experiences can't.